This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and I'm traveling backwards in time with Thomas Halliday, the author of Other Lands, A Journey Through Earth's Extinct Worlds, a new book that allows you to go back and back and back and always asking yourselves, how did we get here from there? We go now to the Permian, 253 million years ago, which is right before an extinction event. So what is around us now is about to go through a crisis. However, what I've written down is that it was both a dusty world and a wet world with mega monsoons. Where do we look, Thomas, for the best fossil record at this point, 253 million years ago?
Oh, well, there's great fossil records from all over the world in the Permian, particularly Russia and South Africa. But one of the lesser known sites, which I think really is very ecologically interesting, is a place called Maradi, which is in modern day Niger. And so, as you say, there's this mega monsoon system. So all of the Earth's continents, all the Earth's land masses is in a single supercontinent at this time, known as Pangaea or Pangaea. And it is roughly C-shaped. And so with this body of water out to the east, what then happens is that as the seasons turn and the northern hemisphere warms up, you then get rushing winds from the south to the north, and it deposits a huge amount. It sucks up the water from the Tethys Sea and deposits it over the land. And so you get this extreme wetness. And then conversely, when the seasons turn again, the monsoon system moves the other way and deposits the water on the southern side. So Niger at this time is right on the edge of an inland sort of desert system. It's where it itself is very dry, but we have records of what you call a Playa Lake, which is a sort of endpoint lake of a river system that would seasonally flow and seasonally dry up. So no water ever flows out of it. It only evaporates away to nothing when the weather is in the dry season. And so the organisms that are there are these are some of the sort of early vertebrates to have properly adapted to a proper arid environment. This is right at the end of the Permian. So as you say, the great dying, the biggest mass extinction that has ever happened on Earth is about to take place. But there are creatures like Bunistegos, which is not actually an apex predator. It's one of the first sort of bulk herbivores. It's one of the first herbivorous organisms to be walking fully upright. But the big predator that is there is known as a Gorgonopsis.
Ah, it's the Gorgon that's the predator, and the Bunistegos is the meat, is the food?
Yeah, absolutely. The sort of cow analog, I suppose. yes, Gorgonopsins are sort of close relatives of mammals. They have these enormous sharp canines with sort of tiger-like grip to them. But this is it's before mammals proper evolve. So although they're more closely related to us than they are to things like crocodiles or dinosaurs. It's relatively early on in that evolutionary story.
We need to attend to the Carboniferous 390 million years ago, because the irony is we're living with the Carboniferous' bounty these days. Thomas, trees grew. They grew as a group and then they died together. How did that turn into the coal deposits of the center of America today?
Yeah, it's not just the coal deposits of America, but all around the world. I mean, here in the UK, most of our coal is Carboniferous, in Germany as well. The coal deposits that you find are the remnants of ancient swamps. So the Carboniferous was a relatively wet period in Earth's history, and there were extensive swamps throughout the tropical belt, which included essentially everywhere where coal deposits are found today. As these trees grew, this is the first time that forests have really existed on Earth. And as they grew and these trees fall into the swamp water and they slowly turn into peat and into coal through just sort of a slow lack of decay, essentially, the water is not very conducive to just the material rotting away or being consumed by other organisms. And so all of the coal that has ever been excavated is essentially composed of that light which fell from the sun onto Earth 300 and 300 odd million years ago and more. It's one of those sort of cruel ironies that at that time, before the Carboniferous, the carbon dioxide concentration in the atmosphere was considerably higher than it is today. And it is the growth of these forests, the removal of that carbon dioxide, forming them into trees and then leaving them behind in the earth as coal, that has lent itself to the atmosphere that we have had for the last 200 million years and more. And now, as coal is burnt, that is returning that carbon dioxide to our atmosphere.
Now, the prize of this chapter, maybe of the whole book, is the Tully Monster. I showed it to people and they were flabbergasted. Is this invention? What is the Tully Monster?
The Tully Monster is probably the bane of any paleontologist trying to sort of classify everything. I mean, everywhere. One of the wonderful things about looking into the deep past, it's like visiting another continent, right, where you are vaguely familiar with some of the groups that live there, but every so often something comes along which completely overturns your idea of what organisms are. You can imagine the first Europeans arriving in Australia and seeing a kangaroo and having nothing to latch it onto. And the Tully Monster is kind of the same thing. It's a sort of small torpedo-shaped organism with a long, I've described it as like a vacuum core, hose at the front with a sort of a grasping structure, perhaps, and then these two bars that come out that have been identified as eyes. But what was the Tully Monster? It remains one of those mysteries. There are some that argue that it's a vertebrate, a sort of very, very oddly shaped fish. There are some that will vehemently disagree and say that it is absolutely not a vertebrate, although it's very difficult to pin down exactly what it is. It remains one of those mysteries. And it's not through lack of specimens. There are hundreds of specimens of these of this creature. It's not just a sort of an aberrant unlucky phenomenon that emerges in the fossil record. It is a real organism that did exist and which is debated intensely to this day.
The reason I seize on it, because there's a theme throughout your book of nature experimenting and going this way or that way. Is the Tully Monster an example of an experiment that didn't pan out? Because you write that those could be five eyes on those constructions, and that would be an experiment. Do we need more than two eyes? We have about 30 seconds.
Yeah, so the reference to five eyes is that one of the things that it could possibly have been related to, according to some people, is an animal called Opabinia, which did have five eyes and lived in the Cambrian and doesn't have any descendants. But that's probably a little bit unlikely, that particular relationship. So
you accept that it's an experiment and it didn't come to anything.
It has no descendants, so in that sense, it didn't pan out.
The book is Other Lands Until We Find It. Other Lands, A Journey Through Earth's Extinct Worlds. Thomas Halliday is the author. We're headed to the Devonian. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.